Well, it's profitable to keep you financially stupid and ignorant because you're going to keep spending all of your money and going into debt to buy all these nice things which make you look rich, and it has all of your friends saying, oh, wow, nice car. That must have been a fun vacation. I really like your clothes. Once you retire, what are you going to do? Your only equity was in your skill set. That isn't something that can continue to pay you when you're not working. That's why you need...
What's up, everybody? I am Jaspreet Singh, and welcome to The Minority Mindset.
I just hired a new team member for Briefs Media, and he told me that our onboarding process blew his mind. Not because of the work product or the process that we have at our company, but because of the money strategies that he saw. Let me show you.
This is what the average person does. The average person makes money, and then they use this money that they earned to fund their lifestyle. Now, this money that you earned can be from your job. It could be from a business that you run. It could be from your YouTube channel. You're going out and making money somehow, and then you're using this money to fund your lifestyle. Now, what I said is if you want to build wealth, you're gonna have to flip this up. If you wanna be a part of the 1% or the 0.1%, first you gotta earn more money. And you're gonna do that here by being an intrapreneur. Intrapreneur meaning you are working as an innovator and as a leader within the construct and confines of our business. Compare that to an entrepreneur, where now you're going out and taking all the risk. So now you're working as an intrapreneur to earn money, and then you wanna take the money that you earn, use this money to then buy assets, and then use the assets to generate cash flow. And then when these assets generate your cash flow, use this cash flow to then fund your lifestyle. It's a completely different way of using your money, because now when you make money, you're making money with the goal of buying assets. I'll talk about which assets to buy and how to do this in just a bit, but you're making money to buy assets, and then you use your assets to generate cash flow. This cash flow is then funding your lifestyle compared to everybody else who's making money to buy their lifestyle. And the reason why this is so important is because eventually you're not gonna have the same ability to work, and you are going to need equity in something, because equity, what these assets are, this equity can pay you long after you stop working. And so what happens to so many people is you work from 21 to 65, and then you retire, and now you no longer have that stream of income, because your only stream of income before was the work that your body could do. You worked at a hospital as a doctor, you worked as an attorney, you worked as a cashier, you did something to generate an income. But when you turn 65 or 67 or 70, however old you are, and you stop working, now the equity in your skill set is gone, and now you have no more income coming in. But if you own an asset, and now this asset continues to pay you, well, now this asset can pay you even when you're not working. But then I took it one step further by explaining my financial situation, because what I said was I'm working to earn money from my Minority Mindset brand. That's from places like my YouTube channel, our website, my speaking gigs that I do. I work to earn more money. Now, what I used to do for a number of years was I would work to earn more money, and then I would take this money and buy primarily real estate rental properties. So I'd be buying assets like real estate. Some of the money will go into stocks, but then this real estate would then generate me around a 7% return on my money annually. Not bad. But then I started to realize that, okay, if I could get a 7% return on my money, it's fine, but what if I could do something bigger? And that's when I started to realize that I need to invest into my entrepreneurial ventures. So that was when I created Briefs Media, my newsletter company. And so now what I'm doing is I'm working here in the Minority Mindset brand to generate money. That way I can then use this money to fund the Briefs Media company. That way we can grow the company, because my goal is to grow Briefs Media by way more than 7% a year. So now if I take $100,000 from here and put it into real estate, that might make me $7,000 a year. But if I take that same $100,000 from here into here, my goal is to get a bigger than a 7% return. However, it comes with more risk, because if things don't go well, if the economy goes south and our company cannot sustain it, I could lose everything. But my goal is now to grow this significantly faster. That way now we can take the Briefs Media brand even further. And then when I went to show this team member around, I drove him in my car. And that's when he saw it in actual action, because I wasn't driving a fancy car. I drove him around in my $500 Toyota with no bumper. That way he could see that I'm living the same lifestyle that I'm teaching him. I'm making money here not so I can fund my lifestyle. I'm making money here. That way I can buy more of this. Yeah, I own rental properties. Yeah, I own stocks, and I still have money going there from some of my income, but I'm actively working here. That way I can grow this, because this then builds equity. there's equity in the company, which you can realize either by selling the company, you can realize by pulling cash out of the company through debt or other methods, but I'm working to build this equity. But the equity that most people are doing is completely wrong, because most people are working to earn money, whether it be through their own brand, through their YouTube channel, through their job, through their business, whatever it might be, and then they use this income to go out and buy a car, or to buy clothes, or to buy vacations. And that's what everybody else is doing, so you assume it's normal, but there's no wealth in anything that you're buying. And this is where now, if you want to be a part of the 1%, the 0.1%, the 0.01%, or the 0.001%, you have to start doing something completely different. And that means now you got to use the money that you earn to buy assets or create assets. That way now you have real wealth coming in that isn't just dependent on you going to work. The simplest way for you to start doing this is to follow something like a 75-15-10 plan, which says for every dollar that you earn from here on out, you cannot spend all of this money. In fact, you want to go out and create 3 different bank accounts. That way now you can separate your spending money, your investing money, and your savings money. That way now for every dollar that you earn, 75 cents is the maximum that you can spend, 15 cents is the minimum you should be investing, and 10 cents is the minimum that you're saving. This way now, no matter how much money you earn, you're always paying yourself first. And when I say paying yourself first, I don't mean going out to the Gucci store and buying yourself a new bag. I mean paying yourself first, meaning building your wealth first. The way you build your wealth is by investing your money into the assets that I was talking about. This is where the wealth is built. Your savings aren't there to make you wealthy. Sorry to all your parents who told you that your savings are there to make you wealthy. That's what I was told too. Your savings are not going to make you wealthy. They're just there to protect you against an emergency. So now, anytime you earn a dollar, you want to be able to separate the dollar out. Where now, 75 cents can stay in that checking account. That's the money that you can spend on your home, your vacations, your cars, your food, all that other stuff. 15 cents should go into a separate bank account. This is money that you're going to invest. 10 cents should go into a third bank account, which is the money you are saving for an emergency. Now, a quick point on the savings money. You don't want to always just save your money forever. You want to save somewhere between 3 months and 12 months worth of expenses. That way now, in case you lose your job, in case your kid breaks their arm, in case a window breaks, in case the AC goes out, you have cash to pay for these expenses without having to go into debt. But once you hit that 3 to 12 months worth of expenses, that's when you can stop saving and take that money and put it here. That way you have 25% of your income being invested, because, well, this is where your wealth is going to be built. Now, to decide how much money you should save, this is going to depend on you and where you are in your life. If you're single, if you don't have a lot of expenses, you don't have a lot of liabilities, hey, you can take on more risk. Maybe you don't need 12 months or 9 months or even 6 months worth of savings. Right now, hey, you know what? You could put more of your emphasis on investing your money into something. And I'll talk about the different places that you can invest your money, but you can invest your money into something. That way you can get a better return on your money, because you don't need to save it right now. But if you're older, you have kids, you have a spouse, you have more financial responsibilities, you don't have a big risk tolerance, then maybe you need 6 months, 9 months, or a year's worth of savings, depending on where you are in your life. But then, this is the money. This is what our topic is gonna be today. This is where now you wanna put this money to work. That way you can build that equity. That way you can build the wealth. Because real wealth in this economic system, in this financial system, in America, is built by owning assets. Wealthy people are rich because they own assets, not because they have a high-paying job. You can be broke with a high-paying job, but if you have assets, you can spend all your money today and still be rich next month. And that's where the real wealth is built. And this is one of those things that our economic system never teaches us this. I never learned this in school. My parents didn't teach me this. I had to go out of my way to learn. And this is one of those things that once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. But if you don't learn it, you might never learn it. And if you don't learn it, you're never gonna be able to capitalize on the way that our economic system works. And in this capitalist system, there are 2 ways that you can make money. You can make money from your labor, the money that you work to earn from your job, or you can make money from your capital. We're always taught about how to make money from our labor. That's what school teaches us. How can you get a high-paying job? But the wealthiest people in this country don't make their money from their job. They make their money from their assets. Our entire system is designed on earning more money from your job. But the richest people are earning their money from what they own. And this is where you have to start thinking a little bit differently. It's not just how much money you earn from your job, it's what assets you own, how many assets you own, and how you're investing into these assets. That way you can build that equity, which will continue paying you long after you stop working.
Now, I can't tell you what to do with your money, but I'll tell you exactly what I do with mine, because I am an employee of the Minority Mindset Companies, but I don't get paid a fixed dollar amount salary. I get paid a commission. and I'm on 20% commission. Meaning, if I go out and I earn $100,000, I don't pay myself $100,000. I pay myself $20,000. And out of the money that I generate for myself, the $20,000, well, most of that money, almost all of that money, gets passively invested. That other $80,000 that I didn't pay myself goes back into the brand. That goes back into Briefs Media to help grow that company even bigger. Now you might be wondering, well, Jaspreet, if you're paying yourself that 20% and you're not using that to pay for your lifestyle, how are you paying for your lifestyle? Again, I have other passive investments that I'm using to help fund my lifestyle. Not to mention that I don't live very large. Yeah, I have some nice things, but I'm not spending a ton of money right now because right now my focus is on growth. My goal is to grow the company. So I pay myself 20% of the money that I generate. Out of the money that I pay myself, then that 20%, most of that gets passively invested. Then out of the 80% that I didn't pay myself, that's going back into the company. That way I can grow the company. Now, I could take all the $100,000 out right now, go buy a nice car, live much bigger, and have a bunch of nice things, but that doesn't align with my goals right now, because right now my goal is to build equity. Now, I could go out and build equity in things like my rental properties. I could go out and build more equity in the stock market. I can invest in other startups, and I am investing in stocks passively. I do have real estate investments, and I occasionally buy more real estate, and I do occasionally invest in stocks. But right now, my primary goal is building the company, Briefs Media, and it's a risk. It could fail. It could go bankrupt. It could go to zero. I could lose every dollar that I invested. That's a risk. That's the risk that you take for investing in yourself like that. But my goal is to build it into something much bigger. I don't know where it's going to go, but I know that I'm going to work hard to make it go somewhere. And that's the investment risk. And you have to decide where it is that you want to build this equity. When most people hear about this term equity, they think of paying down the mortgage on my home. And that is the type of equity that most people think is what's going to build generational wealth. And I hate to break it to you, but that's one of the worst kinds of equity that you can build. Because when you spend all of your money to pay down your home, the benefit that you get is you get a paid off home, but it doesn't generate you any cash flow. And this is where everybody says, but you can always pull cash out of the home because you can refinance out of the home. Sure. But if you do a cash out refinance and you pull cash out of the home, you still got to pay that money back. And how are you going to pay that money back? Not to mention, you still got expenses you have to pay. You might have a pay down home, but you still got to pay the property taxes. You still got to pay the water bill. You still got to pay the utility bills. You still got to pay for the maintenance. You still got to pay for the upgrades. And so you're still paying out of pocket to own this home. And maybe it's going up in value. Maybe it's not. But you still have to fund this equity that you own. Compare that to something like, say, having equity in a rental property. Now, this rental property will be generating you cash flow. That's cash flow you can use to pay for rent for a place for you to live. That's cash flow you can use to buy vacations. That's cash flow that you can use to pay for your car. Not to mention that the cash flow can be used to fund your property taxes on your rental property. You can use that cash flow to pay for the maintenance and the upgrades on the property. It's a very different way of looking at equity. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, you are that I want to build something type, that I don't want to work for somebody else, then you can build equity in your own company. And then the equity can be realized by either selling the business or by using debt to pull out cash from the business. Or you can, if you grow big enough, hire a new CEO to then run the company. So there's different types of equity. You have equity in your own home, the worst kinds of equity. You can build equity in your passive investments, things like your stock market investments, things like your real estate investments, or you can build equity in a company, into a business that you create. But you really want to make sure if you do that, that you want to build a real business, not something that just relies on you. And if you're looking for a resource to learn more about what that means, there's a book called Built to Sell, which I highly recommend you read. That way you learn how to actually build a real business instead of a business that just creates a job for you. Now, if we go back to the 75-15-10 method of now using your money, because now this is a system that can allow you to build wealth and scale with how much money you earn. The reason why I like this type of method is because now whether you make $10,000 a year, $100,000 a year, or $10 million a year, it doesn't change. No matter how much money you earn, you always have a percentage of your income being invested, and you always have a percentage of your income being saved. This way now, when you earn more money, you can spend more money, but you're also investing more money, and you're also saving more money. Now again, when it comes to your savings are going to scale depending on how your savings cushion looks. When you have your savings fund completely full, you don't have to save more money. But when you don't have any savings, then you will continue to save until you build up the savings cushion 3 to 12 months. But your investments are now where you can build your wealth. And if you can invest more than 15%, even better. That is the minimum. But you want to make sure you're always paying yourself first, because what the average American, what most people are doing, is they make money to spend it. They make money to buy nice things. And guess what? When you make money to go to the Gucci store, you make money to buy some Lululemon, you make money to buy Apple, you make money to go shop, you are making everybody else rich. And the expense is you keep yourself poor. And this is where, well, it's profitable to keep you financially stupid and ignorant, because if you don't realize this, you're going to keep spending all of your money and going into debt to buy all these nice things which make you look rich, and it has all of your friends saying, oh, wow, nice car. That must have been a fun vacation. I really like your clothes. Nice belt. But that's never going to allow you to build wealth, because you have no real equity. Once you retire, what are you going to do? Your only equity was in your skill set. You worked to earn more money, to earn more money from your job, but that is not sellable. That isn't something that can continue to pay you when you're not working. That's why you need an external asset that can continue to pay you even when you're not working. And this is where now you need to know how to use your money as a tool. That way you can build wealth, because if you want to be like the top 1%, 0.1%, or 0.01%, you have to start building that equity. That way now you can own these assets that can pay you. Now, there's two different ways that these assets can pay you. You can get paid through appreciation, or you can get paid through cash flow. Appreciation is when the value of your investments go up. You bought a stock for $100, now it's worth $200, and you sold it. That's appreciation. Cash flow is you bought a stock for $100, and now it's giving you $3 of cash flow, a dividend, every year, just for you doing nothing except owning it. Now, there's pros and cons for both, because personally, I like cash flow. I like owning something and getting paid without having to sell it, because now my goal is to stack cash flow. When I first started getting involved into financial education, I was in college. I was making money because I was working in the event planning business. I started this party promotion company and started making a little bit of money. And this was at the tail end of the 2008 crash, when real estate properties were selling for dirt cheap. But at the same time, everybody was very scared of real estate. Everybody was running away from real estate. But I had read a few books about money management and investing and building wealth. And every book said that wealthy people invested in real estate. I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know any real estate investors. I didn't have investor family members. This was something that I read in books. And I said, okay, I'm going to go invest in real estate. So I told my dad, Dad, I want to go invest in real estate. And he said, you're stupid. Go study, focus on becoming a doctor, that way you can have a real career. Now, he didn't say this out of hate, but that was just what he thought was right. My parents are immigrants from a state in India called Punjab. They didn't grow up with financial education. They worked hard because that's what they thought was right, to earn money. And working hard is extremely important. If you're not willing to work hard, nothing I say is really going to apply to you. But that's what they knew. They didn't know that investing is a thing that you could do. But that's what I decided to do. I kind of went around my parents' back, and I secretly started getting involved in real estate. I secretly started investing in real estate. And I was very fortunate, because this was at the bottom of the 2008 crash. And so I was buying properties that were originally selling for $150,000 prior to the pandemic. And then I was purchasing them for under $10,000, because there was so much excess debt, so many foreclosures that banks just needed to liquidate their assets, meaning these banks were selling properties for literally pennies on the dollar. I didn't know this was going on. To me, this seemed normal because I didn't know anything else, but I was very fortunate that when I started doing that, I started generating a little bit of cash flow, because I was buying these properties for very cheap. Then I was renting it out. My first property that I bought was a small condo out of foreclosure. I bought it for $8,000, put in a few thousand dollars worth of work, and I rented it out for $600 a month. Now, that $600 that I got wasn't all profit. I profited about half of that, $250 to $350 a month, depending on the month. And it wasn't completely passive. Actually, it wasn't passive at all. In the beginning, I had no idea what I was doing. I made every mistake possible. So my time was completely sucked up by this deal, because I was just so involved trying to figure out how to manage my real estate properties the right way. Eventually, I figured it out and it became much more passive. But in the beginning, it was a huge, huge, huge time commitment on my end. But I started making some money from this property that I wasn't technically working at. And that blew my mind, because I had no idea that I could own this thing that would pay me. Before that, I ran an event planning company. And the reason why I call it a company is because I wasn't really building a real business. If I wasn't hosting a party or if I wasn't working at a wedding, I wasn't getting paid. All I did was create a job for myself. That's very different than owning an asset or building a company that can continue to generate income even when you're not working. And when I saw that, my mindset completely shifted because now I went from thinking, I'm just going to do more things to make more money to I want to own assets to pay me with cash flow. And then my mindset shifted to, okay, if I need assets to pay me with cash flow, how many assets do I need? And now the game was stack cash flow, own real estate, stack cash flow. And all I did was try to earn money from any place possible that I could buy my real estate. Because now I knew that every unit that I bought, that I could put another $300 a month into my pocket. So now if I can get 10 units, that's $3,000 a month. If I can get 20 units, that's $6,000 a month. And this is net profit after expenses. And that was the game that I was playing. Just making money from anywhere that I could find it, whether it was through this event planning company, whether it was from real estate because I became a real estate broker. I started wholesaling real estate. I started selling on Amazon. I started creating other e-commerce businesses. I was doing a bunch of different things to earn money, not so I can go out and buy a fancy car, but so I could go out and stack assets. That was the only game that I was playing. This is why I call it a decade of sacrifice, because if you really want to become wealthy and you want to achieve financial freedom, you are going to have to put in what I call that decade of sacrifice, where now you're spending less money and you're working to earn more money. That way now you can take this income, this margin that you have, the money that you're not spending, and use this money aggressively to buy assets. And if you're aggressively buying assets for a decade, you are going to surprise yourself, because now you can build a whole asset portfolio that can continue to pay you and fund your lifestyle. That way now you can go to work wherever you want and not have to worry about the money. And this is a completely different game that most people are playing. Most people are working for a raise so they can drive a faster car. I want you to work for a raise. That way you can have a bigger investment. When you have bigger investments, you get bigger cash flow. When you get bigger cash flow, well, now you can have a bigger car. And it's a different way of looking at money, because now if you were to die, you still got the assets that will continue to pay your family way after you're gone. This is true generational wealth that most of us have never been exposed to or taught. I never learned about this before, but this is one of those things that can change you and your family's life once you understand this. And that's one of the reasons why now I'm working to build Briefs Media, my financial newsletter company, because I want to build something different. I did the real estate thing. I love it. But I want to now work to create something and change the way that media is consumed. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Briefs Media, we have a free newsletter called Market Briefs. It is a newsletter you can read in 5 minutes or less every morning. It's a breakdown of what's happening in things like the housing market, the stock market, the crypto market, the global economy, and our own economy. It's a super fun read. And I promise you, you're going to be a lot smarter after reading it with just 5 minutes every morning, and it's completely free. So if you haven't joined Market Briefs yet, I got the link to how you can join down in the description below. But this is where, if we come back to the concept of money, so many people are overcomplicating the concept of money, creating all these super complex spreadsheets, talking about how difficult it is to invest their money, talking about how difficult it is to analyze expense ratios, talking about how difficult it is to find a good money manager, talking about how difficult it is to create this perfect budget, when in reality, it's a lot simpler than that. What you need to do is you got to spend less money than what you make. That's rule number one. Number two, when you spend less money than what you make, you got to save some money. Number three, you got to invest that money. The biggest investment mistake that so many people make isn't that they invest their money into a fund with a high expense ratio. It isn't that they invest their money into the wrong assets. It's that they never invest their money. That's the biggest mistake that so many people make, because you get into this analysis paralysis where you just don't make a move because now you get so confused. Should you invest your money in stocks? If so, should you invest in index funds or ETFs? What about mutual funds? Or should you invest in individual companies? But what about blue chip companies or growth companies? Or what about healthcare companies? Or what about international companies? Or what about dividends or non-dividends? And this is where now you got to just take a deep breath. And remember, the main thing is you have to be investing your money. Now, if you want my thoughts on where you should be investing your money in the stock market, I don't think the average person should be out trying to pick individual companies, because the average person doesn't have the psychology to manage a real investment portfolio. They don't have the education to understand a company's financials, and they don't have the interest to keep up with the company and listen to the earnings calls. And so The average person, if you ask me, should be investing their money into low-cost index funds or ETFs that give you exposure to a broad basket. And what that means is you can invest in companies like Amazon, and if Amazon takes over the world, you make a lot of money. If Amazon goes bankrupt, you lose on your money. But the alternative to investing in individual companies is you can invest in a fund. And these funds now can give you exposure to a large group of companies. For example, you can go to Google and search S&P 500 ETFs. If you do that, you will see ETFs like SPY, that's one example, that will give you exposure to the 500 largest companies in the stock market. Now, again, I can't tell you what to invest in, and that's not my goal here. I'm trying to get you to think a little bit differently and learn about how the system works, because now if you invest in that one symbol, SPY, you are going to indirectly be investing into the 500 largest companies on the stock market. Why does this matter? Because now if one of the companies you invest in goes bankrupt, your entire portfolio doesn't go down to zero. You're still invested in 499 other companies, and then the fund will kick out the bankrupt company and put in a new company. So it makes your investing life much easier. You also have funds that give you exposure to the total stock market. You have funds that give you exposure to the Dow Jones. That's one of the most commonly tracked indexes or funds on the stock market. You have ETFs that give you exposure to the NASDAQ. So now you can just look into ETFs into whatever sector that you want, whether it's the total stock market, the 500 largest companies in the stock market, or an industry like real estate or healthcare or technology. You can find ETFs that give you exposure to what it is that you want and just invest into the ETF. And now, instead of trying to find the perfect company, trying to keep up with the company and research the company and manage that company in your portfolio, you just put your money into that fund and you don't have to worry about it. And you know what else? Technology has made this type of investing so much easier, because now there are platforms out there where you can set up an automatic system where every week or every 2 weeks or every month, cash will automatically be pulled out of your checking account and it will go into your investment portfolio of ETFs or index funds, and it'll automatically invest for you and you don't have to touch it. This way now, you have money that's automatically invested. You have money that's automatically saved, because many banks nowadays will for free create the system where some money can be pulled out of your checking account and go into a separate savings account. That way now you have separate money for your savings, you have separate money for your investments, and you have separate money for your spending money. This way you don't accidentally spend your investment money on a brand new TV. So when it comes to investing your money, it's not that perfection of you investing. It's you getting started, because you're not going to be perfect. You're going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes and you're going to lose money at some point. That's a part of investing. Everybody does. Even the most successful investors in the world, even Warren Buffett, has lost money. He talks about it openly. He actually has to talk about it openly because, well, he has that public company, Berkshire Hathaway, and they have to openly talk about their losses. And so every single person in the world has lost money. The goal is for you to earn way more money than you lose, but you can never earn money if you're not willing to lose money. And you have to get started. That way you can go through the process, you can make mistakes, and so you can learn. I even made a video on YouTube where I talked about my worst real estate deal ever. It was the most stressful deal that I ever had to deal with, and I lost a lot of money on that deal. But it's for me to show you that, yeah, you are going to make mistakes, you're going to screw up, it's a part of the process, but the goal is to make way more money than you lose. And this is where now you have to get started. Don't try to be perfect. Be willing to lose. When you lose, figure out why you lost. That way then you can make smarter decisions, be a smarter investor, and then get better returns on your investments. But you can't do that if you get stuck in this whole analysis of trying to make the perfect investment. Not everybody is going to be an entrepreneur. Not everybody should be an entrepreneur. But you can still be a business owner without being an entrepreneur. If you go out and you invest in the stock market, you are now a business owner. If you bought one share of Amazon, you're one of the owners of Amazon. Now you can benefit from when Amazon makes more money by owning a piece of the profits. Normally what everybody does is they just go to Amazon and buy something on Amazon Prime. You are contributing to the Amazon profits when you're spending money on Amazon. But when you buy one of the shares of Amazon, now you're getting a piece of the Amazon profits. And again, you don't have to go out and buy the Amazon company, but you can invest in funds that give you exposure to the stock market or to our United States economy. That when people spend money or when you spend money, you own a piece of the profits. That's what equity is. And real equity isn't by just paying down your home. It's by building equity in companies, like on the stock market. It's by building equity in real estate investments, not the home that you live in. These are types of equity that will continue to pay you and build wealth long after you're gone. That way now you can build true generational wealth that most people in this country have never experienced. But in order for you to do that, you have to be the first one to break out of the cycle of earning money just to spend it. But I do want to give you a little warning on this, depending on what your financial goals are. I was in the gym yesterday getting a solid bicep pump, and a guy came up to me asking me if I was Jaspreet Singh from Minority Mindset. I said yes. We started talking. Really cool young guy. He was telling me that his family's involved in the real estate business. They own a bunch of commercial buildings around the area, and that he got involved with the vending machine business, and he's trying to figure out what to do. And I said, what's your goal? Like, what do you want to see? He says, I want to go out and start generating passive income. And I said, why do you want passive income? And he said, I want to have this type of financial freedom. That's when I went on to ask him his age. I said, how old are you? He said, I'm 23. I said, you know, that's a great goal to generate passive income. But I want you to really think about what it is that you want. Because if you go out and you start working to generate passive income right now, meaning you work to earn money to buy these assets, you might get a 7, maybe a 8, maybe a 10% return on your money if you're lucky. But if you work right now to go out and generate more money, if you go out right now and you work to build income, well, then you can take the income that you build and go out and generate the passive income in the future. Because if you focus on your income right now, if you focus on earning more money, if you can build something that's worth $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, $100 million, well, now you can take this money that you earned because you worked to build the income first and then use the income to buy the passive income. Because right now, if you're making $50,000 a year and your goal is passive income, well, there's a limit to how much passive income that you get. Because remember, passive income, this cash flow that people like to call passive income, that's a byproduct of how much income you put in. If you put in $10,000 and you get a 10% return, that's $1,000. And by 10% return, I mean 10% cash flow. If you put in $100,000, that's $10,000 of cash flow. But if you put in $1 million, that's $100,000 worth of cash flow. If you want to increase how much passive income you get, you can do one of two things. One, you can invest in riskier places to get a higher cash flow. Or number two, you can invest more money to get more cash flow. Now, even if you invest in riskier places, there's going to be a cap on how much cash flow that you can get. In the real estate game, if you're investing in high cash flowing areas, 7 to 10% is pretty fair. I mean, 10% is definitely on the higher end, but 7 to 10% is fair. So if you invest $100,000, you might be able to get $10,000 a year in cash flow. That's not a lot of cash flow for you to be able to fund your life. You're going to have to invest $1 million to generate that $100,000 with the cash flow with a 10% return. And again, now I'm talking about the higher ends of returns. If you can only get a 5% return, you're getting only $50,000 with the cash flow from your $1 million investment. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be investing for cash flow, because if you don't want to go out and create something, build an income, and you just want to work your job and slowly build the cash flow on the side, that's fine. For the average person, that is the best way to build wealth. Earn money from your job, take a piece of that income, put it into something like a dividend-paying ETF. That is a great way to generate cash flow for the average person, and most people will never get that far. But if you really, really want to build wealth, and I'm saying this because the guy that I was talking to was a real hustler. I mean, he was like really involved with a lot of different businesses. He's trying to build companies. He wants to be an entrepreneur because he said that he wants to generate passive income. And that's when I really started questioning him, what does he really want to do? Because if you really want that financial freedom and you want a lot of passive income, because he made it seem like he wants to have all the nice things, meaning you're going to need a lot of passive income, you're going to need a lot of money. And if you need a lot of money, you're going to have to go out and create something. That means go out and build something. See, the saying is, it takes money to make money, but that's kind of a misconception, because the reality is, it doesn't take money to make money. It takes hustle to make money. It takes money to grow your money. Which means if you want to generate cash flow or passive income, it takes money to do that. It takes money to go out and buy rental properties. It takes money to go out and buy dividend-paying stocks or dividend-paying ETFs. It takes money to do that. But if you want to go out and create something, if you want to go out and start a business, if you want to go out and build an income, it doesn't take money to do that. It takes hustle. It takes drive. It takes commitment. It takes risk. And then as you start generating money, that's when you can take the money that you're earning and reinvest it back into the company. Now, what is this business that you can create? Well, I don't know. Anybody can have a good business idea. There was somebody who made a lot of money creating mugs. There was somebody who made a lot of money creating microphones like this. There's somebody who made a lot of money creating pens. There was somebody that made a lot of money creating notebooks. There's people that made a lot of money doing a lot of different things. You just have to figure out what's the right business model for you. Is it selling something on the internet? Is it selling a service? Is it selling education? Is it selling some sort of physical product? What is the value that you can create? And if you can work to create this thing that can generate you more income, now you can take this more income that you have and use it to generate that cash flow, that passive income. And this is where you have to get it beat through your head that if you want to generate more passive income, if you want to generate more cash flow, you need more money to invest. Where do you get this more money? Well, this is where it's going to really depend on you. And if you really, really, really want to make more money, you are going to have to create something. There's a limit to how much money you can make by working for somebody else. Period. But not everybody has it in them to go out and create something. So if you're working for somebody else and you're not happy with how much money you're making, you got to ask yourself, is there a way for you to earn more money in the career and the position that you're in right now? If yes, then go pursue that. If no, and you're still unhappy with how much money you're earning, what can you do to earn more money? Now, there are ways to do this through a job. You get a career change. Go and get a certificate. Go and get better experiences. That way you can earn more money. But there's always going to be a cap unless you're getting paid with equity or you're getting paid with stock options. I mean, that's a whole different thing. But now you're not getting paid a salary. You're getting paid in ownership, right? Equity is different than salary. Salary is a check that you get for doing something. Salary is a check that you get for going to your work. Equity is now you're getting a piece of the profits. That's where wealth is built. And this equity is something that you can either go out and create because you went out and built a business, or it's something that you can purchase. You can go out and buy equity in a company. You can buy equity in the Amazon company by buying shares in that company, or you can earn that company if you work for a company that's paying out equity. But that's a whole different risk, because now if you work for a company that's giving you equity, and the company never sells and never gets acquired or goes bankrupt, well, now not only didn't you get your full salary, but now you lost the ability to earn more money. So you take on a lot of risk if you're getting paid with equity. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing. Some people have made a ton of money doing that, but some people have also lost a lot by betting on their company becoming a whole lot more valuable. So if your goal is cash flow, which I like cash flow, the more money you invest, the more cash flow that you can get. If you want a lot of cash flow, if you want a lot of passive income, that way you have a lot of cash flow coming in to fund your lifestyle, you need a lot of money to invest. If you need a lot of money to invest, right now is the time for you to go out and earn more money, especially if you're young, especially if that's what you want to achieve, especially if you have the risk tolerance, especially if you have the drive. Then you have to focus on earning more money. Now, where do you start? There's a ton of resources for free on YouTube. Start reading books about how to build a business. Start reading books about how to innovate. Start reading books about how to manage employees and start creating something. You don't have to have the perfect business idea first. I started a lot of different businesses, which some of them made money, some of them didn't do so well. You have to be willing to start. Each thing that you do is going to teach you something, whether it's good or bad. But in order for you to learn something, you have to actually do something. And this is where so many people get caught up. Just like how when you try to pick the perfect investment, people get stuck and they don't make an investment. People who want to make a lot of money get stuck in this idea of, I don't know what to do, and so they don't do anything. Now, you should not go out and start a business with the goal of just making money. Making money is a byproduct. And the reason why so many people who just chase money don't get it or don't feel any sort of fulfillment is because they did it all for the wrong reasons. And I can tell you this from experience, because when I was doing the event planning company, I did it just to chase money. And I can tell you that because I didn't know any better at the time. I was fresh into college. I was working in the event planning company when I was in high school. That was an opportunity for me when I got into college. I wasn't into partying. I wasn't into drinking. I don't drink. I never drink. I don't smoke. That's not what I do. But I became one of the biggest party promoters on campus because that was what was accessible. By the end of my college career, even though I had built such a good name, I had contracts with the biggest clubs on campus to do every week parties. I shut it down because I hated it. I hated being around that environment. And so you can chase money and you'll get money, but you're going to feel no fulfillment and you're going to have no drive to want to take it further. And so if you really want to achieve that success, you got to chase the value. What value can you provide that nobody else can? That way now you can, one, change the world through your product, but then also as a byproduct of the value that you provide, you can make some money. Because money is a byproduct of value. The more people you can help, the more people you can impact, the more services that you can provide, the bigger the service that you can provide, the more money that you're going to be able to make. But it starts with you doing something and creating something, and then you're going to learn about so many different processes along the way. You're going to learn how to sell. You're going to learn how to market. You're going to learn how to manage people. You're going to learn how to email people and use technologies. There's a lot of things that you're going to learn, and you can't know all of it going into it, but you have to start. And this is where now it goes back to that question. What is your goal? If your goal is cash flow, fine. How much cash flow do you need? Now you can run the numbers. If you can generate a 7% return on your money, how much cash do you need? If it's $70,000 a year, you need $1 million invested. Okay, you can do that over the course of your career, but if you want to do that by the time you're 30 or by the time you're 40 or by the time you're 50, now you got to work backwards. How many years do you have until you hit that age? How much money do you have to invest every single year? Can you do it with the income that you have right now? Maybe you got to spend less money. If you can't do it by spending less money and you need to earn more money, now how do you earn more money? Can you do it through your job, or are you going to have to create something? How much value can you provide? And again, some people have that entrepreneurial bug where you cannot work for somebody else, that you have to create something. Some people don't. Some people have to work for somebody else because they don't have the risk tolerance, they don't have the discipline, they don't have the interest, they don't have the ability or whatever else to go out and create something. There's nothing wrong with working for a company. There's nothing wrong with being an entrepreneur. They're just different skill sets. And you have to find the right skill set for you. That way you can work to earn money for the right reasons. Because if your goal is financial freedom, what kind of financial freedom do you want? Is it cash flow or is it asset values? Now, there's three different aspects of money that we just talked about. We talked about managing money, we talked about making money, and we talked about saving money. Now, this is where a lot of people get the order of operations wrong. Most people think that the first thing you have to be able to do is know how to make money. And then once you know how to make money, you got to know how to save money. Then once you know how to save money, you have to know how to manage money. When in reality, the first thing that you need to know how to do is you need to know how to manage the money that you earn. And the reason why I say this is that there are so many people in America that are earning their six-figure salaries that are broke. People that are earning $100,000 a year, broke. People that are earning $250,000 a year that are broke. Actually, statistically, the majority of people that are earning six figures a year are still broke. It's not because they're not earning enough money, it's because they don't know how to manage the money. And most people assume that the solution to their financial problems is just earning more money. But statistically, when the majority of people earn more money, they dig themselves into a bigger financial hole, because when you earn more money, banks look at you and say, oh, you're even more credit worthy. Here's a bigger line of credit to buy a car. Here's a bigger credit card line of credit. That way now you have the ability to spend more money. That's what the first thing you have to do is you got to know how to manage your money. Then you need to know how to make more money. Because now once you know the system of how do you spend money, how do you invest money, and how do you save money, this is where now knowing how to grow that income becomes so important. It goes back to the 75-15-10 plan that I talk about, where for every dollar that you earn, 75 cents is the maximum that you spend. 15 cents is the minimum that you invest. 10 cents is the minimum that you save. If you want to amplify how much money you're investing, that way you can buy more cash flow, that way you can own more assets, you have to know how to earn more money. And now it's important to understand you're earning more money after you know how to manage your money, because now when you earn more money, you have more money to invest, you have more money to save, and you have more money to spend. And that's where now knowing how to save your money strategically comes into place, because people get worried about saving their money before they even have any money, before they have any assets. But you have to know how to earn the money, and then you have to know how to manage the money. These are things that you have to know. That way you can actually take care of your wealth and focus on the right things when it comes to building your money. And going back to that topic of building something and creating something on your own, if you go out and build something and create something on your own, the risk is, again, that you can lose it all. And so high risk, high potential return. And you have to remember that with high risk, that also means that you can lose everything. And that's what happens to a lot of people. And right now we're seeing the economy slow down. And as the economy slows down, we see more bankruptcies happen. That means people who were building something, creating something, invested their life savings into something, invested all their time into something, lose not only their job, but every dollar that they invested into this asset that they hoped would have been worth a whole lot more money, which is where understanding that not everybody is cut out to take that risk, because when the tide goes out, you see who's been swimming naked, and it's very easy to then lose it all when you don't know how to manage or create or sustain what it is that you're building. Here's a quick recap of what's happened recently. First Republic Bank collapsed. Bed Bath & Beyond filed bankruptcy. Vice News is going bankrupt. Not to mention all the layoffs that we're seeing in every single sector of our economy. But what's even more important than the bankruptcies that we're seeing happen is the acceleration of the number of bankruptcies that are happening. The trends are showing us that bankruptcies are happening, but we're also seeing an acceleration in the number of bankruptcies happening. Now, the question is, why do bankruptcies happen? And there's two reasons why we see a company go bankrupt. First, it has to do with the business. Second, it has to do with the money. The best example that I can give you of this based off of current events is Bed Bath & Beyond. Back in the 80s, the 90s, Bed Bath & Beyond was considered a category killer. They were putting mom and pop companies that were selling household appliances, household goods out of business because they created an innovative and a new way and a fresh way to sell these types of products. And they were growing very quickly. They were generating market share, which meant mom and pop companies were going out of business. They were a category killer, and everybody thought that they were taking over the world because of how fast they were growing and how much market share they were generating and how much money they were making. Let me read you this title from an article that I found from a Forbes article in 2020. The title is Bed Bath & Beyond Happy Together. And it goes on to say that over the past 28 years, Bed Bath & Beyond built one of the fastest and largest home furnishings and housewares retailers in the world. Sales will pass $1.8 billion this year, which is up 30% from the last year, and sales have been doubling every 3 years since the company went public back in 1992. Bed Bath & Beyond was a prime example of everything done right. They were innovating, they were creating, they were leading, they were making money, and they were taking market share, meaning they were putting other companies out of business, primarily mom and pop companies. But then over the years, they started to become more complacent. They started to become fat because they just kept making these big profits, and they assumed that because they had all this market share, that they were going to continue to be the leaders. They were going to continue to be the market dominators. And over the years, technology started to change. And companies started to change. We saw the Amazon effect, where people wanted to shop online. People wanted to buy things online. People started to spend more time online instead of going into their traditional brick and mortar store. And we saw companies like Bed Bath & Beyond try to innovate, but kind of just sit back on their throne because they were still making a lot of money. So it started with the business, where they weren't innovating in their business, they weren't changing their business, they weren't updating the business, and then it ends with the financials, because people started to get concerned about the company, and they were still doing okay, and that was when they decided that they want to reward their shareholders, because they want to make sure that if you've been investing into this long-time successful company, Bed Bath & Beyond, you keep making your money. So what did they do? The board of Bed Bath & Beyond issued a $325 million stock buyback back in the year 2021. And as soon as they announced this, their stock rallied. Meaning, if you were an investor in Bed Bath & Beyond, you just made some money. Because the board finally came to their senses and said, our stock is too low. It has nothing to do with the business that we're operating. It has nothing to do with the products not being sold. It's just the stock that's trading too low. And so to fix that, they used their cash in their bank and debt to buy back the stock, to inflate the stock price, and that made shareholders richer, and it made the investors happy because then the stock rallied. And then the board said, you know what, $325 million is not enough, so let me read you a press statement by Bed Bath & Beyond back from 2021. Bed Bath & Beyond increased their stock buyback from $325 million to $625 million. When they announced this, guess what, the stock rallied again, because now this means that the board is coming to their senses to make the stock go up, to make the investors richer, and now they used an even bigger chunk of their cash, their profits, and future earnings from debt to now make the stock rally, and that's exactly what happened. But now they had issues with the business, And now they're having issues with the financials because they're digging themselves into a financial hole by using hundreds of millions of dollars, over $600 million, not to go out and build their e-commerce store, not to invest in new technologies, not to grow their market share, but just to make the stock price go up. And then that came to bite them back because they weren't able to turn the company around. Why? Because they didn't have any money to turn the company around and they didn't necessarily know what to do. They tried to invest in the e-commerce store, they tried to build partnerships, but they weren't able to turn it around fast enough, and couple that with the changing economic environment. And now you have this category killer. Bed Bath & Beyond was a category killer that was putting companies out of business, which was then put out of business because of other category killers. Companies like Amazon and other e-commerce stores effectively put Bed Bath & Beyond out of business. And this is where everybody points fingers. No, it's because of the higher interest rates. No, it's because of the debt levels. No, it's because of this or that. When in reality, if people kept spending money at Bed Bath & Beyond, they'd continue running the way that they were before. And the reason why people weren't spending there was because the business model wasn't keeping up with the times. And then they weren't able to save the company because they had no more money left because they spent all their money on other things, including stock buybacks. So a company goes bankrupt first because of the business, second because of the financials. And this is where now, if we go back to the broader economy where we are right now, this is where it's very important to understand what's happening. That way now you can position yourself the right way. That way you can take care of yourself, your family, and your community, because we're seeing a lot of big changes in the economy. We just talked about Bed Bath & Beyond. You can see the same things happening in the banking sector. Recently, we saw the biggest bank failure since the 2008 crisis when First Republic Bank collapsed. Now again, why did First Republic Bank collapse? Because of two things. Number one, they were sitting on a lot of underwater assets. First Republic Bank had a lot of bonds, meaning loans, that were underwater, meaning these loans were worth less than what they paid for them. So they weren't able to sell out of these loans to raise money in case they needed it. Second, when people found out that First Republic Bank was sitting underwater on these loans, people started to panic. Social media makes it very easy to learn about these things and panic. So people pulled their money out of First Republic Bank. A lot of money was pulled out of First Republic Bank very quickly. Third, when investors heard of people pulling their money out of First Republic Bank, the stock of First Republic Bank crashed hard. And that made it nearly impossible for them to go out and raise more money, which then led to their collapse because they had no way of continuing their operations. They had no more money to go out and lend to other people because banks make money by lending money. And when people pull their money out of the bank through their savings accounts or checking accounts, they don't have money to lend. And so now First Republic Bank couldn't make money and they also couldn't raise money because they were underwater on their assets. And that was when First Republic Bank collapsed. Now, look at where we are right now. We are in an environment where interest rates are rising. The Federal Reserve Bank is working to raise interest rates to bring inflation down. We're also in an environment where the economy is slowing. The last GDP report said that our economy slowed faster than expected. So we have interest rates that are rising, which makes borrowing money more expensive. We have the economy that's slowing. And we still have a high inflation, which also hurts the economy because high inflation means you have to spend more money on your rent, your groceries, your vacations, which means you have less money to spend on other things. So we have all three of these things happening at the same time while debt servicing costs are rising. And this is such an important point that I don't think enough people realize the significance of this because it hasn't hit yet. But now as interest rates are rising, what you have to remember is for the average person, what does that mean? Well, that means a few things. Number one, if you want to go out and buy a home, you might be paying more money on your mortgage. That's pretty obvious. If you want to buy a car, your car payment might be a little bit more. Again, pretty obvious. But you, as a consumer, have the decision of whether or not you want to buy a home. If you don't want to go out and pay 7% for your mortgage, you don't buy a home, you continue renting, or you continue living in the home that you're in right now. You have that choice. But the choice isn't there if you have something like, say, credit card debt, which is a variable interest rate debt. Meaning, now as interest rates rise, your credit card debt also becomes more expensive, not because you have more credit card debt necessarily, but because the interest rate, the interest payment on your credit card goes up as interest rates go up, is variable interest rate debt. That is most of what consumers have to deal with when it comes to variable interest rate debt. But when it comes to businesses, it's completely different. Corporations, commercial landlords, don't get 30-year fixed rate mortgages. They get adjustable rate mortgages, which means now as interest rates rise, their cost of servicing debt also rise. And there's a big thing going on that around 2025, by the end of 2025, we're going to see a huge chunk. Some people are estimating up to 50% of these types of debts are going to start readjusting. Meaning, if you are a commercial landlord, you own a, let's just say, $10 million office building. And now you might have gotten a 4% loan a number of years ago. But if interest rates continue to stay high and that loan comes due in a couple of years, now you're going to have to readjust. And that means your payments might go up by 20, 30, 40, 50%. Your expenses can rise significantly if your interest payments go up. And if your incomes are not rising fast enough to support the higher expenses, that's when you get in trouble. And now if you're an office landlord and your building is half vacant because your tenants are remote workers or they're hybrid workers and they're not willing to renew their leases, you're going to have a tough time raising your rents by 50%. And that's where we're going to see a lot of changes happen if interest rates continue to rise or if they continue to stay high. And interest rates will have to continue to stay high or rise in order to bring inflation down. So we can also look at corporate debts, because now if you're a corporation, like many did in the last few years, who raised billions of dollars worth of debt, yeah, it allowed the company to boom in 2020, 2021, even into 2022, because you could borrow money so cheap. But now, over the next few years, as more and more of this debt starts to readjust, that means your cost of servicing this debt, your expenses to run the company, not because the cost of the company go up, but because the debts of the company become more expensive. As your debt become more expensive, now you're going to have to pay more money to service the debt. And sure, it's not a big deal if you can make more money. So now if you're a corporation and your expenses are going up because your debt servicing costs are going up, that means you're going to need to increase your revenues by 10%, 20%, 30%, maybe even 50%, depending on how much debt you raised, which might not be a problem, except we're seeing a slowing economy. And so now if you're seeing a slowing economy and companies aren't able to make enough money, that's what can then push companies to do more layoffs, cut costs, reduce divisions, cut sizes, because now you have to be able to continue maintaining the debt. Now, the alternative is interest rates start to fall. But that has its own consequences. And this is where a lot of people are debating on what the Federal Reserve Bank should do. You have a lot of people saying that the Fed needs to start cutting interest rates, that the Fed needs to start stimulating. But let's talk about that. What does that mean? If the Fed were to start cutting interest rates, that would encourage borrowing. That's what interest rates do. People borrow based off of how much interest rates are. When mortgage rates come down to 3%, what do? They go out and buy a home. They buy cars because the debt is cheap. When mortgage rates go up to 8, 9, 10%, what do? They don't buy as many homes and cars because it's a lot more expensive. And it's the same thing with corporate debt and business debt. So when if interest rates go down because the Fed decides to start cutting interest rates, well, that could definitely stimulate the economy because people would start spending money, businesses would be able to spend more money, and that would encourage more economic growth, which is good on one hand, but that would also then make the inflation problem worse, because inflation is when you have more money in the economic system, because more money then creates more demand. Because now if people are now able to go out and borrow more money, then you have more buyers buying the things that we have. Like if mortgage rates went down to 3% tomorrow because the Fed started cutting rates, what would happen? More people are going to want to go out and buy a home. And if you see this whole new flood of borrowers or buyers out there trying to buy homes, where are home prices going to go? Higher. What's that going to do to inflation? It's going to go higher. And this is where now, I've been saying this, but the Fed is really getting between the rock and the hard place, because on one hand, they're trying to not break the economy. On the other hand, they're trying to break inflation. Inflation hasn't really broke. Yeah, it's come down off of its highs, but it's really far from where it needs to be. The economy is starting to feel the pain. We're seeing the pain in the banking sector. We're seeing that pain with Bed Bath & Beyond and other companies that are doing layoffs or declaring bankruptcy. So we're seeing some pain in the economy while inflation is still high, which is where now you want to keep your eye on what the Federal Reserve Bank is doing. You want to keep your eye on interest rates. You want to keep your eye on inflation, because this is where now it is going to play a huge effect on what's going to happen in the economy. And now a lot of people are either scared about this or they're completely oblivious to it. And both of those are the wrong emotion to feel, because for one, recessions happen. They have happened pretty much every decade for the last century. But these types of economic downturns also create more opportunity than any other time. There's a reason why recessions create more millionaires than any other time, and it's because when you see economic downturns or recessions, you see good assets go on sale. Like when Macy's puts on a sale for their clothes, you'll see a line wrapping around the block because everybody wants to get the newest sweater or whatever they want to get. But when you see assets go on sale, whether it's stocks, businesses, real estate, people get scared and they panic and they sell. But that can create one of the best buying opportunities if you know where to look and if you're prepared with access to cash. And this is where now understanding we have a lot of red flags out there with the economy. We have a lot of red flags with inflation. Interest rates are also a big pain point. All these things are simmering and brewing, and now we're seeing more side effects of this. And this is where now you need to be financially educated and you want to be prepared. Prepared meaning have cash put aside, that way you can capitalize on opportunities and also protect yourself, because if you see a great investment opportunity but you have no money to do anything about it, it doesn't do any good. This is where right now you need to be preparing, working to earn more, spend less, so you have that money put aside. That's why I keep saying 2023 is not the year for you to go out and finance a new truck. 2023 is the year for you to get financially smart, because now you want to be preparing in order to be able to capitalize on opportunities that might come your way. Now, what if nothing bad happens, that there's no economic pain that comes? Well, that means all you did was prepare and you have a big bank account and now you can go to Disney World or go out and invest this money. There's no harm or cost to you preparing, but there's a lot of harm and a lot of cost if you don't prepare. And this is where now you want to be financially smart, that way you don't get blindsided by what happens. Now, let me read you this title from an S&P Global article. We did cover the story in Market Briefs, my free financial newsletter, where we keep you up to date on what's happening in the top finance and business news in 5 minutes or less every morning, which is why if you haven't joined Market Briefs yet, I got the link to hike and join down in the description below. But what they said is pandemic era debt overhang will add to finding pressure in the coming years. And what this article goes on to talk about is that all this corporate debt that I was talking about, the corporations loaded up on in 2020, 2021, and even into 2022, once this debt starts to readjust, it is going to be a big burden on corporations. And if corporations do not have the ability to continue making the payments on their debt because they're not growing their revenues fast enough, it's going to pose a lot of problems and it's going to cause corporations to need to downsize, because they will have to find a way to either cut costs or earn more money. And it's hard to earn more money when you're in a recession. And so the next best thing is to cut the costs. And what are those costs? Employees. This is where, again, you want to stay up to date on what's happening. That way you can be aware of what's happening, but also be prepared. That way you can capitalize on opportunities that come your way.